I guess this is a question I'd like to ask all of you, not necessarily the people from DOT, because this doesn't really relate to DOT issues, but I believe I'm a 31-year resident of Cornelius, and I believe that one thing that really should be talked about that wasn't talked about during the program is I think it's going to be the dinosaur in the room, which is going to be utilities. In 15 to 20 years, I suspect we're going to have rolling brownouts. We're going to have issues with sanitary water drain, sanitary sewer drainage, stormwater drainage, and even water supply. There haven't been any type of, treatment plants or nuclear power plants or any power plants built to try to handle the massive growth that's going on in this entire region. How would you all address that type of issue?
Let me address the question about electricity, which is part of your question. Duke Energy has long-range plans for preparing for growth in our state. The demand for electricity is not actually growing that fast. Even as the population grows, I think Duke's got something like a 2% per year average growth, and their plants can handle what they have right now. They are adding capacity primarily right now with gas-fired power plants. As you know, they're retiring their coal-fired power plants. They are seeking an extension on the license for the McGuire Nuclear Station and the Catawba plant, which are pretty much close to the end of their lives, but they can get an extension if they can show that they're okay. So I think Duke is preparing for that. The other thing is we are absolutely conserving, and people have more energy efficient homes these days, and so the demand for electricity is not growing so much that I think it's going to get away from us. The other thing that's happening is alternative energy, solar and wind, is starting to become popular, and in North Carolina, we like to talk about ourselves as having the second most solar in the nation, and that is absolutely true. Duke Energy, up until this point, has taken a lot of privately developed solar onto its network. That has helped to cover some of the growth in our area. The next wave of growth in solar is going to be in two areas. One is going to be your rooftop, if you want to put solar on your roof, and the other is going to be community solar, which is still a program that's being worked out, but the idea is that there would be smaller solar facilities in your area that you could tap into and you could pay money to be part of. There is a lot of criticism of both of those programs that Duke Energy is running. There were rebates, but they ran out on the first day, so the incentives are not there. But I think there a lot of people want to do solar, and so I think we will see more of that. You're going to have to spend the money yourself to do it. But the community solar is a little farther behind. It's a great idea. I don't want to put the panels on my roof and spend all that money, but I would pay a monthly fee to get solar power in my house, and that's something that's coming. The rules right now are not fully developed, and it's not clear how that's going to work. But as far as those go, I think we're okay on the electric side, at least 20, 30 years down the line. The other kind of utilities, water and sewer, we're talking about Charlotte-Mecklenburg Utilities on that. And Charlotte-Mecklenburg Utilities, I've covered it for a number of years, and they are very forward-thinking. I think of all the different kinds of things we're talking about here, way beyond transportation, they have long-range plans in place. They know where the lines are going to go. They know what year they're going to need to put them in. They have somebody watching all the development plans and everything. And another thing about that is you can't build a subdivision unless you have that. So they have a way to keep that from happening until they're ready for it. So,
well, we also are blessed with abundant water, but climate change is a reality, it seems to me. And with when you have more people coming in, and I heard the other day that the climate in Miami is going to be the climate in Atlanta, and the climate in Atlanta will be the climate in Washington, and the climate in Washington will be the climate in Boston. So everything's moving up. It's getting hotter. As that happens, are they planning for greater use of water?
Well, the Lee S. Duke Center, I think, is really only at half of its capacity right now, so they can double what they're doing now.
That's a water treatment plant.
Yeah, water treatment.
Okay.
So, I mean, Duke has to consider climate change as one of its factors. It never used to be something, but it and other large companies all now have to show their investors that they're paying attention to climate change and how it's going to affect their business in the future. So.
Okay. Back there.
Thank you. My question goes to Bill and Scott from transportation. I heard a lot about hardening of the shoulders of I-77 as a solution to the peak time of moving cars. If you talk to anybody from the police department, fire department, or first responders, they are definitely against that idea because it would increase their response time to where they need to be. So if you could reach out to them, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Any comment?
They're simply going to be absolutely included in the evaluation of that technique that's been proposed for I-77.
But if you harden the shoulder and you let people drive on it, what does that do to the exits and your ability to get off? Does that become the exit lane?
It becomes your exit lane, yeah. You know, I come from Massachusetts, and the Mass Pike and some of the roads there, they use the shoulders during rush hours, and that's the way it works.
And in this case, the shoulders would not go through, the usage would not go through the interchange. It would start at an on-ramp and stop at the next off-ramp. And so it's not a continuous usage in this particular case.
So it literally becomes local traffic.
That's the thought.
Correct.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You have to understand with transportation projects, only the very smallest projects, like adding a turn lane, will cost less than millions of dollars, because transportation, roads are expensive, and the land that we buy to put roads on is expensive. But we are working with the MPO. We had a meeting last night. We're working on acquiring some federal funding to help us with that process. And, you know, we're not talking about a major reconstruction here. We're talking about utilizing the shoulders for a peak period traffic.
How involved is NCDOT, if at all, in helping to figure out a way to bring commuter rail or even light rail of some sort to this area?
So we are certainly involved, and we're one of the partners in that process. You know, we've been a funding partner in the light rail that's been built to date, 25% funding partner.
Right.
So we'll continue to be engaged with that process. But,
I mean, are you helpful in finding a way to actually a pathway? Because obviously Norfolk Southern doesn't want us to use the tracks, so we have to find a different way to get here.
You know, we're certainly a partner in that, just like everything else. You know, we engage with the North Carolina Railroad, who leases other track to Norfolk Southern. So there is some leverage involved there. You know, I think we're a player in that discussion.
I don't know how many of you commute into Charlotte. How many of you commute into Charlotte? How many of you would take a bus into Charlotte? How many of you would be more likely to take the train? Why? Just anybody at random who would take the train but not the bus.
I took it in South Charlotte, and it was the stops were smoother and easier of the bus trying to get back in and out of rush hour traffic. Actually traffic was the issue in South Charlotte. That's why I did take the train, because the bus could get stuck in traffic just
so,
like anybody
So Mike,
else.
Let me add to that a little bit.
Okay.
So how many of you would take bus rapid transit if the buses would operate unfettered and have guaranteed headways?
Let's explain that a little bit, Scott.
That is what is considered. Yeah.
What he's talking about is the buses that would run in the toll lanes. They would be very predictable, as he says. You know, you could get on it in Cornelius and know you'd be downtown in 45 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever.
And those buses usually have amenities on them as well.
So how many would take that?
And you need to also think about the frequency of operation. A commuter train in the morning peak hour, what we were talking about is a train every 20 minutes to 30 minutes. Okay, to take you in, and then similarly to bring you home in the evening. The buses, because of the flexibility, you can add more buses and you can get to the same sort of frequency that you see on light rail, where the bus comes every 10 or 15 minutes. And so you no longer have to live your life by that schedule.
Okay.
You can live your life by whenever you need to go somewhere, you walk out and you get there.
How many of you want a trolley? Oh, that's a Charlotte issue.
It would take 2 hours.
I was just going to say, in comment to that, trains and the buses from a schedule standpoint is still the same. I used to commute from Charlotte up from Harrisburg and also from Huntersville, and it wouldn't matter if it was a train or a bus. There's still a schedule. So you're still living the schedule regardless one way or the other.
But if it comes more often is the point, then you don't have to think about it as much.
With the
weekend service.
There can be.
There could be.
It hasn't been.
Right. There hasn't been. And absolutely correct.
There's also a problem with the website to take the bus. It's very hard to figure out how to get a ticket. It's very hard to know that you can get passes. You can only have, you know, the special rates, you know, are the accounts are only for people who have employers in Charlotte. I mean, the current system is extraordinarily difficult for someone who wants to go in, say, for lunch or for brunch, you know, on a Sunday afternoon.
Amen.
You know, you can't get there. You know, the Charlotte just rolls itself up, you know, on the weekend. And there's so many activities and there's so many. I mean, what about going to a football game or going to a basketball game? You know, there's so many places where you could use more transportation, but it's just not provided. And it is not, you haven't educated the public on the accessibility, on how easy it is to use. Anything that has two or three or four steps to be able to get to try that bus for the first time means that people will never do it.
Which community do you live in, ma'am?
I live in Cornelius. I commuted on the bus for about 12 weeks when I was taking a class at UNC Charlotte. I enjoyed it tremendously. But I do find, and it was much, much easier. I mean, the only way I was going to take that class was because I could take the bus.
Well, I would tell you that myself, Mayor Washam, Mayor Annarella, Andrew, Bill are all on the MTC, which is the CATS committee. So if you'd reach out to somebody via email or something, we'll see if we can address that. How that website could be more friendly, because those are the kind of things that we need to hear to take back.
Well, I tried to take a two-way trip on the train using the app, and I find myself now with three extra tickets. They've been there for months. And I thought I was smart, but obviously I am not, because I can't even use their app. Back here.
Hi. One of the things recently, Fort Mill has allowed impact fees to help pay for roads and schools and to stay ahead of that. I'm just curious whether or not this panel would support something to call upon our legislatures, because currently it's not allowed by North Carolina state law. If you would be in favor of supporting changing this law to allow municipalities to assess impact fees to help pay for schools and roads.
Can I answer that?
You go, Jack.
Jack,
start out by saying what an impact fee is.
Yeah, so an impact fee is it's published in a development, let's just say a subdivision is building houses. That home is charged X number of dollars per home, and part of it goes to the schools, and part of it go to transportation. That is really a political decision, but I can tell you I've been in this business for 37 years now, and when I was in Currituck County in the early 2000s, they tried to get legislation to do that, and they had a lot of powerful legislators there, Mark Basnight included, and it just was not in the cards. We did in I think it was maybe 2003 or 4, Huntersville went to Cary, North Carolina, there's a lot of similarities between our two areas, and they had transportation impact fees. They got the permission from the state of North Carolina, and I'm telling you, they were so advanced. I mean, it was incredible to walk into their operations center of Cary, and Bill was with us when we were there, and see what they were able to do. I have a sister that lives out in Cary, and they are able to keep up with roads a lot better. So the only thing I can offer is I have seen places that have had the impact fees, and they are extremely helpful. The issue, though, with the schools, local government doesn't control the schools. That's CMS. And so that doesn't work. Cary had impact fee for schools, and it just didn't work, so they dropped that. So
it's a county function. Yeah.
And I would tell you, South Carolina just re-implemented impact fees. And I don't know if it's in the last year or 2 years, but they didn't have impact fees either. That goes a long way. I mean, when you look at 100 home, 200 home subdivision coming in with a $10,000 to $12,000 impact fee per lot, you know, that money starts to add up.
So this is something that the legislature has to give the okay to? Natasha Marcus is here. She's a Democrat of the General Assembly. Natasha, how difficult would this be? Would there be political, would there be people in the legislature pushing back on this?
Oh, yes. The current legislature is very much in the hands of developers, in my opinion. I won't get too political about it, but developers write the laws in North Carolina right now, and developers are never going to agree to pay impact fees. We have tried on behalf of Cornelius and another town I represent, Pineville, to at least allow the town to put to the voters whether they would like to increase a local sales tax to be able to pay for improving roads. It's the only other option that exists right now. And my sense is the legislature is not even going to allow that to happen.
Why do they hate us so much in Raleigh?
I spoke to another local legislator who is more senior than I am, and he said taxes are already too high. We can't allow them to go up, period. So I guess suffer with current transportation as it is their answer. I disagree, but that's their answer.
You should move the capital to this region.
You want all those people too?
Now you're getting opening a can of worms there.
Anybody else have a question or a comment? Over here, there we go.
Sure, I'll ask a question. So I'm a little surprised that downtown, all of our three towns, the downtowns weren't brought up, just because they're, in my opinion, our greatest assets and our greatest underutilized assets. Maybe not Davidson. I mean, you guys really are a crown jewel, like very unique. But it gets to your point that those downtown areas really are, they are what sets these three towns apart and distinct from other parts of the county when folks are looking at where to live. And especially Huntersville in particular, it really hasn't changed that much in the last since I've lived in this area. And that's really disappointing because I think it could really accommodate a lot of the growth that we know that's coming, that desire for walkability, mixed use, retail, all those types of things.
So since you mentioned Huntersville, I will say in 2010, Discovery Place Kids opened. And that last year brought in 180,000 visitors, over 180,000 visitors. So that's a big change in our community because when I first got there in 2001, you know, it was a consignment shop and a used car dealership. So now I see parents and their grandparents with the children in the downtown that you didn't used to see. So that is something that has changed. It's a big change. The town board is we're in the process of getting ready to improve Main Street to have two-lane roads and a roundabout north and south of downtown to help, one, move the traffic, but also keep the traffic calmer so folks can walk. And with these streets will come sidewalks where folks can get around because a lot of these roads in the downtown of Huntersville, there's not even sidewalks that you can walk in. Walk on. So we're investing in sidewalks. We've got that $14 million Main Street program. And we have recently modified our development standards so that water quality, if a developer wanted to build in the downtown area and they couldn't meet their water quality standards in that area, they could pay us the money and we would go downstream because land is so tight in your downtowns. It's hard to make that work. And let me say, water quality is real important. I mean, it is essential for us, and we have come a long ways in improving our water quality, even with the massive growth that we've had. But we're providing some alternatives, I guess if you say that they could pay out, and we'll do it downstream and still get the water quality that we need. So it will be an ongoing effort, I will say. When I was early in my career, I heard someone from Bern, Switzerland, talk about what they were doing to bring housing in their downtown, and that somebody asked how long it would take, and they said, well, we think about 100 years, that ought to make a big difference. So
wow.
My point is patience. It takes patience, and it's going to be incremental, but the Main Street is going to be transformative. And Veterans Park, there's... Our Parks and Recreation Department has over 60 events scheduled for this year in our downtown. So, you know, things are changing.
Andrew, we talked about this when the mayors of these three towns were on last week, and that is the art center that's coming, or on the drawing boards at least, in Cornelius. And I looked at pictures of it today. It looks tremendous. It looks really exciting. What's the timetable for that, and how do you see it being used, and what do you think the impact will be when it becomes a reality?
Right. So thank you, Mike. That's a great segue to the young lady's question. We have a downtown which is ripe for potential. And I'm looking at some of my residents back there, and I know they know that. And a lot of them live very close to downtown, so we're all very excited. The Kane Center for the Arts, which Mike is referring to, is an astounding project. And the designs are even more so. Fundraising is going very well, and it's a partnership project between the town as an organization and also the Kane Center for the Arts. We're roughly halfway there. If everything continues to go well, we anticipate breaking ground next calendar year, and it's about a year timeline of construction. But back to the lady's question, as soon as that was announced, it was a catalyst for developers. The planning department, much like Jack's cohort, Wayne Heron, and our planning department, just constantly people coming through the door talking about what's going on downtown, tell me about the Arts Center, what can we do? There's been so much excitement, and there's a lot of things, much like in Huntersville, that are about to happen, announcements around the corner, a lot of development projects going on behind the scenes. And also, a lot like Huntersville, we have a veterans monument there, which is very popular, adjacent to Town Hall. With the Arts Center being right front and center of downtown, we also have plans in our capital improvement plan for a Festival Street. And if you're familiar with the Festival Street idea, we would reconstruct a couple blocks of downtown, and it would bring everything at grade, remove the sidewalk curbing, if you will, so that we can shut down downtown for a couple blocks for festivals and that type of thing, and do it at strategic times so we can, and we're actually implementing, someone mentioned local roads, we're actually building some local road connections so we can detour traffic around so we don't gum up traffic, but it'll be a great place to come to, and much like the lady in the back mentioned about Huntersville Jazz Festival, we want to have that in the future in downtown because that's where people want to go.
And that's not 100 years from now, right?
No, that's in my lifetime.
Yeah, Mike, I'd be remiss if I didn't say something. We spent the better part of an hour and a half talking about the growing pains of the Lake Norman region. And I know I've talked to chamber presidents. They don't have growing pains. They have stagnation. And in some cases, they have their kids, when they go off to school, they don't come back because there's not job opportunities. I would much rather have a community that's growing because people want to live here. They want to work here. They want to come here and visit. But I would tell everybody in the room tonight, each of us, not just Rusty or Jack or Bill, each of us in this room have a responsibility to leave our communities better than we found it. That's our charge. And the people coming behind us, we owe them that. So that's the thing I would really like to impart. Yeah, there's a lot of growing pains, but I'd rather have those than than the alternative.
I just want to follow up on the question about downtown. That was absolutely right. Just to put a little perspective on it, Huntersville and Cornelius and Davidson are all way cooler places than they were in 1993 when I moved here. And I mean that in all the best ways. I mean, obviously people know about Davidson. They know about the restaurants and the farmers market and all the festivals. But if you look carefully at what's going
on.
Well, the college, too. But actually, the college is not the reason why all those happened. The things that are changing in all three towns are happening because people have decided that they want to make a change in the place that they live, and they are inventing things. So look at the festivals in Huntersville and some of the downtown changes, some of the new restaurants that have gone in there. Those are happening because people are taking a chance on that, and they're making it happen. They're trying to get their fellow residents to come downtown, and even more so in Cornelius. You know, there's an entire private effort there in recent years led by a few individuals who camped out in downtown Cornelius and said, we're going to make this a Cornelius Arts District. And that actually has led into the idea that there could be an art center down there. And there are festivals there, the Tauba Walks and the Friday night things that they do. There's this new public house and coffee shop on Catawba Avenue there. There's all these little shops across the street. There's a gallery there. That's stuff that wasn't here even 5 years ago. And it's happening because some people said, you know, we want to live in a cool place. We're going to make it that. And that's the only way these things happen.
Over here.
Yes, sir. Mike, a couple of weeks ago, you did a program on Cornelius on the, I think it's the area was called Smithfield.
Yes.
And just
I believe you were on that show, were you not? No?
I was not. No.
Okay.
I just wanted to hear what the update is with that and what the areas are doing to improve upon, you know, the kind of elephant in the room, gentrification.
So speaking for Cornelius and Smithfield itself, and the town for years, and I'm sure Mayor Washam touched on this when he was on her show recently, for years we've worked with that development, worked with the community. We want to see the community, as a town, we want to see the community thrive and stay there. We want to see the people who have grown up there stay there. The neighborhood as a body, they have had a lot of conversations amongst themselves as to what the best path forward is. And we've done our best as an organization to support and facilitate those conversations. So we're anxious to see what comes out of their current planning process, which I'm sure Mayor Washam mentioned during the show with Mike. And it's been one of the best planning processes that I think that neighborhood has ever had. And so we're very hopeful and optimistic that something comes out of it that has some consensus that we as an organization can sink our teeth into and partner with other folks to help the community.
You know, the first step in these things is for people in town to get the idea that we do need to do something to save these neighborhoods. It's so easy for that people to look at the real estate there as something of increasing value, and let's just buy it up and we'll put something there and who cares where the people go. But in Davidson, the west side of Davidson has been consciously held on to by the town, I would say, with the affordable housing programs that the town has and the Davidson Housing Coalition. We're seeing this new initiative in Cornelius around Smithville. There's a neighborhood in Huntersville called Pottstown, which is off of 115, that I think is also in danger of gentrifying. And of the three areas, I would say that's the one I would be the most concerned about in the next few years, mainly because there's not a cohesiveness and there's not a it doesn't feel to me like there's an initiative there to do anything. I did a story recently about the towns got together and they did a study of affordable housing needs in the area, and no surprise, there is a shortage of housing for people who make less than $40,000 a year. Those areas are all what we would call naturally occurring affordable housing. It's already there. The question is, how do we keep that from going away and also build additional housing? And maybe, you know, you guys want to address, I don't know, Jack, what do you guys think about the Pottstown area?
So, interestingly, the mayor's been leading the charge. We have a community cleanup where we are doing that. It's first Saturday in May in Pottstown. And it's just not cleanup. It's just building bridges and trying to understand the needs and the wants for the community as well. And there's going to be lots of activities for the kids there. Lots of different churches and organizations are going to be there helping out. And so it's one of these, we think, a good opportunity for us to work in the community, talk with the community, and find out what their needs are and then see something grow from there. We did that in another community earlier or the end of last year, and it created some bridges and identified issues that we needed to deal with, and so we hope the same thing for Pottstown.
I'd like to address the comments that this lady made about developing downtowns and how to make them better. There's only so much that government, local government, can do to entice development to downtowns. Once you get beyond that point, then it becomes the responsibility of all of us. I agree wholeheartedly with what Bill Russell said in the respect that most downtown areas of cities or towns are made up of small businesses. And as a small businessman myself, there has to be a recognition that small businesses are taking a risk based upon whatever enticements that local governments may provide to bring them into their towns. And that's something we all have to be aware of.
Okay, let's go up there and then down here.
Yes, I was wondering if Cornelius had decided how they're going to handle the other side, the east side of exit 28, and how that is going to impact the Smithville community.
For the history, for folks in the room who may not be aware, there were a few different designs that NCDOT and the town collaboratively worked on. One of the designs did go into the Smithville neighborhood. That design is not moving forward. There's a different design that involves a couple of roundabouts, and most of the improvements are along Interstate US 21. There is an idea to make a connection into Burton Lane, which is on the north end, but it's not the design that created a lot of angst and concern that you're probably referring to from about a year ago.
So that's not been completed. You don't know exactly how you're going to handle that at this point.
There's a design that is moving forward, and I'll look to Scott to see if the environmental document is done on it. I believe it's about done, so that would be the final design.
Yeah, we're finalizing the environmental document and beginning our right-of-way acquisition very shortly.
So that's the two roundabouts?
Yes.
That's correct.
Yeah, as we call a bow tie intersection.
My question was, and Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, with the I-77 thing, environmental study, economic studies were not done. I need to know if that's true or not.
No, it's not done.
But they were not done.
But normally
he was
when
just
you
just talking about
but
the
normally when
fixing
you
21, but they're waiting for the environmental bit.
Normally when you add capacity, you know, growth happens, but in this case, no, there was not an economic development study done.
There was not an economic development study. There was an environmental document done.